Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Local, your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. Today we'll rebroadcast portions of two shows from March of 2012. Coming up a bit later, we'll be privileged to hear two faculty members of the University of Illinois School of Music, horn player Bernard Scully and pianist Ian Hobson, along with visiting violinist Andres Cardenas in conversation about conductors and other things, and in a live performance of a movement from the wonderful trio for violin, horn, and piano by Johannes Brahms. Our first two segments, however, will feature several faculty members from the Community Center for the Arts, located in downtown Urbana, or C4A, as they commonly call themselves. It's a rather unusual community music school in that they teach much more than classical music, as you'll learn in the ensuing discussion. On the occasion of their appearance on Live and Local on March 5, 2012, the C4A faculty were previewing their annual Faculty Showcase concert, which was held at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Urbana. Joining us were Tom Foe, Chris Raymond, Chris Peterson, Doug Schroer, Matt Croissant, Justin D'Angelo, and the director of the Community Center for the Arts, Robin Kirtan. You guys have such an interesting mix of teachers, subjects, ensembles that is not altogether typical, at least in my experience, from community music schools. So just for those who've never heard of this organization, just give us the lowdown on what's that about.
Well, I have been fortunate enough to have run into an astounding array of musicians who are all really great players and dedicated teachers, and happen to play, I don't know, I can't say that we play every style, but we play many, many, many different styles. And even in this room with us, we have seven people, I guess, but I'm having a hard time counting the instruments. There have a lot of instruments that we play, and most of us perform regularly in a number of different styles. We have pretty diverse backgrounds and training, but basically we'll teach anything with strings on it, and we have piano and accordion and harmonica program as well.
But also, when you say any style of music, I mean, some people think of you go to community music school and you learn classical music of some kind or another, but you go way beyond that.
You certainly can learn classical music. We boast three regular symphonic section leaders on our violin faculty, and we have all been really thoroughly classically trained, but all of us play another thing. You know, we've played tangos, and we've played jazz and bluegrass and old time and klezmer, and I'm kind of running. There's a lot of things. We also have guitar staff who can play Cajun and rock and all the different kinds of rock. That's kind of a big umbrella. I can't just say rock, because somebody's going to get upset with me for leaving them out. And mandolin, and so I don't know. I can't really list, but the big things, we hit most of the folk genres and most of the ethnic genres and most of the rock and classical, and blues and jazz. And I'm looking to see who's giving me entreating looks to not forget them. but we do. We have ensembles to help students learn a lot of these different styles, too.
I have a list of the ensembles right here in front of me. Should I read it?
What's on your list, Kevin?
Well, you can tell me if it's accurate. And if it's not, then you've got to fix your website.
Let's hear it.
The Accordion Club. Chris Raymond is here playing with the accordion. The Cello Choir. And Chris Peterson is here with the cello. The Blues Band. Who plays blues around here?
Tom Foe and Chris.
And the Bodacious String Band, which is it's almost the founding ensemble of the community music school, a community center for the arts in a way.
It is, really. It started before C4A did, and was sort of the magnet around which everything was pulled.
Which is mostly for younger players, but not exclusively anymore.
Yeah,
and you have a Cretaceous band, I understand now.
Yeah, that's...
That's next on the list.
Yeah.
First for old farts. Jazz combo, rock band, and this was a new one on me, U-Chug.
That's the new harmonica users group, Urbana-Champaign harmonica users group, that's just starting up its first meeting this evening. It's a first Monday of the month, Monday evening, 7 o'clock at the Center for Arts.
And that's Doug Schroer right there.
Yes.
Yep. And that's a freebie. You can just come in and talk harmonicas with Doug.
So yep. You chug, not what you might think.
No. No, I know we're coming right after unofficial, but no,
it's... Yeah. Well, what do you guys plan to open up with here? Let's hear some live tunes.
There's a tune called Ami Tieta. This is something that the father of a friend of mine wrote, Silverio Fiestas, who is a musician in northern Peru. And this is a marinera, which is a couple's dance in northern Peru. It's sort of danced with a handkerchief and a man and a woman circling each other.
As opposed to a marinara.
Which is a kind of red sauce.
That's a saucy one.
Yeah.
So there's still room to dance here, Kevin.
Take it, Tom.
And that was called what again?
Ami Tierra, to my land.
To my land. A marinera.
Marinera.
N-E-R-A?
Yes.
I'm testing you now. I'm testing myself just based on your pronunciation. And that's from Peru, you said?
From northern Peru.
Northern Peru. Is the guitar you're playing, Tom, at all Peruvian? Or is that a regular guitar?
This is a regular old Japanese-made Spanish guitar.
Because it looks a little Spanish, that's why.
It does, yeah. Well, it's a classical guitar.
Is it smaller than usual, or are my eyes bigger than usual?
I've grown.
You've grown? Oh, well, I won't say anything further about that. Tom Foe playing the guitar, and Robin Kirtan, who is director of the Community Center for the Arts, whose musicians and faculty members we have with us right here, playing the violin. Chris Raymond on the accordion, and Chris Peterson was playing on the cello. Chris Peterson, one of your newer
Chris
folks.
Just came on board this fall, or end summer. Of summer, sort of, yeah.
From where?
I just graduated from Millikan University in Decatur.
In cello or in other things?
Cello, yes. My degree is in commercial music.
So you were working with Amy Flores.
Then. Yes.
And is Amy also on your faculty? Do I see one?
She's helping with different groups and performances and such.
Including the cello ensemble, or is that Chris's bag?
She's directing the cello choir. It's not running presently, but she's planning on launching a class of it at some point soon.
Well, yeah, because it's on your website, so
I
you
know.
Have to have it.
We do.
But I assume that also is an invitation that if somebody sees cello choir, then that's an encouragement for people to sign up for cello lessons, and then you'll have more cellos to have a choir.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I know that in addition to giving the lessons, that the point of the ensembles for you is to make sure that everybody who studies there has ample performance opportunities. That's a big part of your program.
It is. It's we all believe really strongly that music is one of those things that works best when it's done with other people. I mean, there's just the musical interaction, and there's the social interaction that happens, and just the synergy that it's created when you're playing with other people. It's really great to spend time by yourself in the practice room working things out, but at least to me, there's a personal satisfaction in that, but the real fun and joy happens when you get with other people and play.
Well, for example, I'm going to use myself as an example of somebody who hasn't quite started lessons yet on a particular instrument that I've talked with Tom here about, because Tom also plays and teaches the banjo. And I said, somebody gave me a Banjo for Dummies book, and I said, I might have to finally follow through on this. What kind of banjo? And he said, well, there's the one kind there that you would have to spend a lot of time practicing before you would want to be heard with anybody, which is the bluegrass kind. And then there's the other kind where you can learn pretty quickly and get out playing with people, which would be the clawhammer style. So.
So what have you decided?
Well, I haven't yet. Yeah. I'm just sort of bringing that up as something that you were sort of leaning heavily towards suggesting, the one where you can get out and play with people, which just sort of goes with the philosophy of the school.
Of we also have a very good bluegrass banjo teacher on our staff.
I asked him. I asked Ken. He was here a couple weeks ago with the... Prairie Dogs.
Yeah, he probably told you that the bluegrass banjo was...
No, he didn't, actually. No, I was sort of focusing on, well, if you go with the open backed or with the resonator. And he said, you can play anything on the resonator. So it seems to depend somewhat on who you talk to. But the point is encouraging people to play, because you feel better about your music making. If you're, I'm always really dubious.
That's at the heart of what we do at C4A. And you talked about C4A being a little bit different than maybe some of the other music schools in the world, community music schools. And I think one of the things that does set us apart is we really, really strongly encourage all of our students, no matter what their instrument, what their genre, to play with other people.
What their level, probably.
And what their level. Yeah. We have figured out ways of incorporating very sophisticated players and beginners into the same kinds of ensembles. And we're doing some partnerships with Dyke Corson at the store. So the idea is to start sort of a music center. And as we all know, downtown Urbana is somewhat languishing. It's been a long time since there's been an active retail world down there. And one of our hopes is that by teaming up with Corson and having this kind of music center, Urbana may even become known as sort of a central location for music in our area.
Yeah. I mentioned our move to one of the gallery owners down there on Main Street, Jan Chandler, who has the Heartland Gallery, and she was immediately excited. She could see the potential for sort of an arts, they have the gallery district there, but she could see the potential for more of an arts district formation there on Main Street. And Dyke and we've been speaking with Dyke Corson about all sorts of really great collaborative efforts that you'll no doubt be hearing about in the future.
Well, and there are. I mean, you mentioned Jan and the Heartland Gallery, and that's sort of a music center in itself.
She does a lot of performances there, yeah.
She hosts a lot of things. The Iron Post, we often mention on this show, because they have such a variety of regular music happening there. Yeah. And then there's the center that's in the space where you're currently occupying, which is the Independent Media Center. Uh-huh. Where they have lots and lots of concerts.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think downtown Urbana is already trumping downtown Champaign on the live music scene, at least when it comes to non-rock.
Yeah, it is moving in the right direction, and we're hoping that having a more central downtown location will help us contribute to that trend even more. We'll have street-level access to playing space, and it's going to be really nice.
Speaking of live music, what would you all like to do next? Who's going to show off next here?
What's our next?
I think Doug Schroer is going to show off the harmonica.
And on what are you going to show off?
We're going to play Summertime.
By George Gershwin?
Yes, although not exactly in his style.
Well, what's his style? I mean, people have taken that song and done all kinds of things to it. I'm not sure I've heard it on a harmonica yet.
Well, it's certainly been played on harmonica.
Here we go.
Doug Schroer.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just Doug Schroer there. We had some nice things going on all around. You know, I think I figured out why I've seen Doug Schroer before. A couple of summers ago during the Folk and Roots Festival, Tom, you hosted a little beginning harmonica class with mostly kids sitting
That's
around.
Right.
And I was sitting around there. And this guy came in with several pockets full of harmonicas.
That's me.
And that was him. Because he was showing off really nicely, and we were all going, whoa, you can really do that on a harmonica. Summertime, George Gershwin, Doug Schroer on the harmonica, and then we had Justin D'Angelo on the piano, on the keyboard, and Chris Raymond on the accordion. Who else was going on here? Matt Croissant on the bongos, which is not what I knew was in your list of things.
We didn't figure we had space for the drum set in here.
You're right about that, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm traveling a little bit lighter today.
Well, it was appropriate for that. For that, and then Tom Foe once again on the guitar. Did I miss anybody on that one? I think the other Chris and Robin just sitting out and relaxing through that one, as was I. That was really enjoyable.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of a portion of the Live and Local edition of March 5th, 2012, featuring faculty members of Urbana's Community Center for the Arts. I'm Kevin Kelly. We'll continue in 1 minute.
I don't see listed, Robin, in your list of lessons and classes, anything having to do with voice, but you just told me that Matt here is going to sing.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounded like an apology right up front.
No, that's an accurate statement on both fronts. I teach a lot of things, but voice is not one of them, but... I do enjoy singing a lot, and the chunk of the program that I'll be doing on Sunday is going to be a lot of singing and a lot of guitar. It's kind of a departure from the classical violin and large ensemble pieces. So, this is an old, I'm pretty sure, pretty old even, song called Rain and Snow. And I should preface this by saying this is in no way autobiographical.
Well, I'm really eager to hear what this is about now.
Thank you.
I've heard various kinds of music coming out of Mac Croissant, but that's a first for me hearing you anyway. That was wonderful.
Oh,
rain
you.
And snow. And I figured out pretty quickly why you made sure to comment that that was not autobiographical, just in case your actual wife might be listening.
Yeah, well, and I had to tell her when I started practicing this around the house that it was apropos of nothing that was going on. I just liked the song.
Then again, you know, if you really needed to worry about that, maybe, you know, needed to worry about telling her.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I just, you know, I thought I'd head that off. I have an unfortunate tendency to pick really dark songs for occasions where that's maybe not a pro. I think this is possibly the most lighthearted thing that I have ever done for a faculty performance at this school.
You mean involving vocals?
Yeah.
Or at all.
Yes. No, involving vocals. Yeah. Right.
Well, it can't all be sweetness and light.
No, although I tried to balance that out with the rest. Everything else I do is a little bit less somber.
That doesn't.
Throw in a plug here. Every summer, Matt teaches a unplugged rock summer camp for kids. And it's this kind of fair and more. And it's really very successful, and the kids really like it.
Yeah, it's a good time, and it's also a good opportunity for kids that play instruments that are not part of the standard kind of guitar, bass, drums, rock ensemble to get some experience. This last summer we had a clarinetist who showed up, and I watched the video of our final performance, and my wife walked in and said, "Wow, that sounds really good." And I said, "Yeah, I think I want clarinet in every rock band now." And we had a, you know, flute, and I would be thrilled to see some violins and cellos show up this time around. Maybe even, you know, trombone, French horn. I'd be up for it.
Don't discriminate against the viola. No.
No, not the viola.
No.
Hey. Wait a minute.
Oh, poor violas.
Haven't heard anything till you've heard viola on distortion pedal.
Which I have heard, actually. It was great.
Then you haven't heard anything.
Well, I'm all for varying the whole concept of the rock band. You know, the whole notion of guitar, bass, and drums, as far as I'm concerned, is really old.
Well, we do that kind, too.
Yeah, I mean, we also do that.
As exclusive.
Yeah, exclusively, no. I mean, I think there's a place for a lot of different instruments in that style.
So these are faculty members of the Community Center for the Arts in downtown Urbana. They're giving their annual faculty showcase concert. Matt indicated that he's doing a chunk.
Yeah, well, we've got the program split up into kind of
chunks.
Into chunks. You know, there's. I'm leading off the second half of the program.
Yeah.
Followed, I think, by what we're.
Yeah, our next part.
What we're about to do.
The first chunk is features faculty members Aaron Jacobs and Tatiana Shustova playing the formidable Liszt Grand Duo Concertant. And that piece is so huge that it constitutes its only its own chunk.
And that's violin and piano.
Violin and piano, yeah.
And then they mercifully gave me a break before I had to play, so I don't have to go on immediately after that.
Yeah, the ones who have to follow that are Doug and friends. And I think they'll be able to pull their way just fine.
We've had hints now at what's going to close out the show.
Hints. Well, what variety show, I say what variety show would be complete without a tango?
None I can think of that's worth anything.
Absolutely the right answer, Kevin. Yeah, this one is a Russian tango called Papirosa. Shall we hit it?
Hit it, and thank you all for coming in. We heard a Russian tango called Papirosa, performed by members of the faculty at the Community Center for the Arts of Urbana in advance of their annual faculty showcase concert in March 2012. Robin Kirtan, who directs the center, played violin, Tom Foe played guitar, Chris Raymond played accordion, Chris Peterson was on cello, Doug Schwarr played harmonica, though perhaps not in this piece, Justin D'Angelo played piano, and Matt Croissant played something, but he plays so many instruments I'm not sure what he did on that particular tune. Coming up in our final segment, we'll hear a portion of Johannes Brahms' trio for violin, horn, and piano on Live and Local. Andres Cardenas is a violinist and conductor and former concertmaster of the Pittsburgh Symphony. He's also a friend and colleague of pianist Ian Hobson of the University of Illinois faculty, and in that capacity had come to Urbana in March 2012 for a recital with Mr. Hobson and with fellow UI faculty member, horn player Bernard Scully. The wide-ranging program featured the horn trio by Johannes Brahms, from which we'll hear the final movement near the end of this encore segment of Live and Local on FM 90.9. And I guess first, I should say congratulations to Bernhard for becoming the official horn professor at the University of Illinois.
Thank
for
you very much.
2 years. You've been the interim.
Yep.
And that just happened a couple of weeks ago. Visiting, is that was that
yeah,
technical
that's term? What it was called.
And welcome to Andres Cardenas.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So you have a relationship of some standing here with Ian Hobson.
We've been longtime friends, and of course we've collaborated many, many times and various different genres as a conductor for each other, and we've made several recordings together, and of course we've played a lot of chamber music and the recitals together.
What made you decide to leap away from the Pittsburgh Symphony out of a pretty plum job to do these other things?
Well, I think my shelf life was up. I just felt that it was time to move on to other things that I really wanted to do, and I never saw myself as a career concertmaster. You know, I wanted to be a complete musician, and I did it for 21 years, and it was time to do something else.
21 years with Pittsburgh or elsewhere in
Well,
Pittsburgh?
A total of 25 years altogether. I had 3 years in the Utah Symphony as a concertmaster, and 1 year in San Diego, and 21 years with the Pittsburgh Symphony. I felt, you know, that was almost half my life, and I thought that was enough.
Well, since I haven't had in this studio the a concertmaster, either present or former, of one of America's major orchestras before, let me ask you, what are some of the challenges of being a concertmaster of a major orchestra, and what's the importance of that role? It's a term that people hear a lot, and I'm willing to bet that most people have no idea what it means to be a concertmaster.
Well, there are many, many facets of the job. First and foremost is you're kind of the face of the orchestra. You know, you're kind of the focus outside of the conductor. So when the conductor isn't around, if he's out of town or doing other things, then you're basically the sort of the beacon of the orchestra. And so that requires a huge amount of effort because really, you know, you have to go to a lot of fundraisers and appear at a lot of functions, represent the orchestra in various venues and under different conditions. And of course, then every year you perform with the orchestra as a soloist. And I, of course, played not only concertmaster, but I ran the Pittsburgh Symphony Chamber Orchestra, which I was music director for 11 years.
Which is quite an unusual role for a concertmaster.
Yeah, but it was created for me to kind of showcase my abilities in various different areas of conducting violin and viola, chamber music, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, I also conducted the orchestra every year. So really what happened was that I started outgrowing the situation, you know, because I was doing everything except be the music director. And so it was just time to move on.
Well, coming back just to the role of the concertmaster, you told me some things that I didn't necessarily know about being the face of the orchestra. But what about when the orchestra is playing? What do the other musicians use you for lack of a better term? Or, you know, what are the responsibilities of the concertmaster in the midst of performance?
Well, there's a certain hierarchy that kind of occurs. It's not a hierarchy of positions so much as it is of following. It's my job to basically interpret what the conductor is doing. In other words, you have conductors that come in from France or Switzerland or England or American conductors, and everybody has a different style, a different background, a different school that they come from. It's my job to basically interpret what they want and how they want to do it. And from that point, all the principals around me kind of follow my interpretation of what the conductor is doing. From there, all the section players follow their leaders. So not everybody can be looking at me all the time. If there's any problem in a concert, I'm usually the person that they would look to for organization or to establish security in the orchestra.
What kind of problem are we talking about?
Well, let's say that the conductor gets lost. Or, you know, the conductor can make a mistake.
Never happen, Ian, would it?
No. Not to Ian, it wouldn't. It wouldn't happen to him, but it's happened to others. And so for security and for you know, balance in the orchestra and all that kind of thing. You know, I will move my head or I'll move my body in such a way to make sure that everybody is together, that we're on the same page. And, you know, it's really no different than any kind of team. You know, you're it's nothing against the conductor. It's just simply if something goes wrong, you want to help the conductor. We don't want to have something happen in the concert that would either reflect badly on us or the conductor. So, like I said, this hierarchy sort of works in a sense as a team, and each person is responsible for their own role in this. And my role happened to be, you know, to help the conductor as much as I could, to support the conductor, his ideas, his vision for the piece. A lot of times a conductor would come in and not know exactly how to do something with a stringed instrument, but he'll describe what he's looking for, and then it's my job to offer a suggestion to how to achieve that. So really the position requires somebody extremely knowledgeable. I think the most difficult part of the job was playing within the texture of the orchestra, meaning that you're kind of a member of the section, so you can't ever stick out. But on the other hand, you're the solo violinist, so when you're playing something like Scheherazade or you're playing Ein Heldenleben by Strauss, you have to move back and forth from a solo kind of playing to a blending kind of playing. And to make those changes on, you know, on the fly is actually the most difficult part of the job, because really you have to be very present as a soloist. But then at the same time, it's like you have to change your technique instantly to remain within the texture of the rest of the orchestra. So it takes a certain amount of ability to be able to do that. You got to have nerves of steel to also do that, because, you know, when you're playing in front of your peers and your colleagues all the time, they're very judgmental, and you know, they're always thinking, well, he's the leader and he's getting paid more money, and so you better produce, you know.
And listen
so
to that mistake he just made or something.
Huh?
And listen to that mistake he just made.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's a lot of pressure to do well all the time. And of course, you want to represent the orchestra well, and so there's a considerable amount of pressure.
Speaking of people who have to have nerves of steel, we happen to have an orchestral horn player here with us, Bernhard Scully. So just out of curiosity, from the horn section, how much do you lean on the concertmaster, and for what?
Oh, it's all the things you said. I mean, it's. I think that the connection, at least that I have, we're in the back of the orchestra. So we're always, you know, late. You know? So it's like oftentimes if we just simply follow the conductor, if you look at the conductor and we react to that, we're late. And so much of what I feel like I have to do is maybe more immediately with the woodwinds and with the other brass, but also with the strings. You actually, there's a lot of even physical connection, you know, to watch, like Brahms' First Symphony or something. I mean, you just have to, you know, look over there and watch, and I watch the bow, and it's, you know, so he's about the same as the conductor to me, you know, as in the back of the orchestra. It's you know, thank you.
Yeah,
for
and
doing
as long
what
as,
you do.
Ling, as long as we're doing this sort of round robin thing, and I got in this topic, you know, as a sometime conductor myself, I often feel a little confused about the role of the concertmaster, and I find it a little disconcerting sometimes when I'm looking right in the orchestra and here's the principal violist looking squarely at the concertmaster and not as me at me as the conductor, and I think, what's going on here? What do you how do you balance that as the other leader of the orchestra?
Well, you know, I've noticed that same thing. The eyes,
it's weird,
the
isn't
eyes,
it?
The eye contact between the principal cellist and the concertmaster, or the second violin principal and the viola, very often if they happen to be sitting in contiguous sections, you know. But it's very natural because they're actually playing it. We are kind of administering from afar, whether if we can administer in a musical, artistic way, an inspirational way, all the better. But we're giving hand signals, basically. And they are playing instruments and playing, in the best sense, chamber music with each other in the sections. So it doesn't bother me if I see them looking at each other rather than looking at me, as long as they, you know, as long as the result is good ensemble and it's really the aspect of a conductor not being a dictator, as they sometimes used to be in the old days, but you know, a principal among equals who's, as I said, inspiring the best out of the players in front of you.
Ian, talk a little bit about the assembly of this program that's happening tonight. There's a little bit with you and Bernie. There's a little bit with you and Andres, and then there's you all together.
Well, the guiding light of this program is the piece that Brahms wrote, known as the Horn Trio, for violin, French horn, and piano. And it's a great, profound piece, a very difficult piece. And I thought of the pleasure that it would be to play with these two gentlemen at this piece, because I think I've played it with Andres a couple of times, and you know we think it's a rare and wonderful event when you get to play the Horn Trio and you feel good about it all around, and that's what we're going to have here. And so that piece I really wanted to do. I was looking forward to playing chamber music for the first time with Bernard, and when I invited Andres to come to play, it was to play this piece, but also then we decided to play the Kreutzer Sonata of Beethoven, which we've played before, and then Bernard has offered some pieces which I didn't know before, some melodies by Gounod, and Saint-Saëns' Mouvement de Concert.
Morceau de Concert.
Morceau de Concert.
Yeah, these are two pieces I've actually played myself.
For the Gounod melodies?
No, I have never played those, but I played the Morceau, and on my sophomore recital, I played the Brahms
Trio.
Trio, which is just splendid. So now I get to hear a little bit about how it really should go. It's a four-movement piece, and we're going to give away the very ending, but that's all you get of tomorrow night's recital, which starts at 7:30. It's a free program at Smith Hall. And it's Andres Cardenas, guest of the University of Illinois campus, Ian Hobson on the piano, and Bernard Scully on the horn. And they're live on Live and Local. That's how it's done, folks. Andres Cardenas, violin, Bernhard Scully, horn, and Ian Hobson, piano. That was the final movement of the trio for those instruments by Johannes Brahms. It's just a fabulous, fabulous piece of music. And it will close the recital that these gentlemen are giving tomorrow night at 7:30 at Smith Music Hall. It will include some six melodies for horn and piano by Charles Gounod, and the Morceau de Concert of Camille Saint-Saëns, also for horn and piano, and then the wonderful Kreutzer Sonata for violin and piano by Beethoven, and then intermission, and then you get the three of them doing this piece together. And you also get to hear Ian play on an actual piano tonight instead of our clavin over here. And I thought you made it sound pretty good.
Yeah,
that's
pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's such a fabulous piece. Is there another piece of that combination?
There are a couple. Have you done the Ligeti?
No, I haven't done the Ligeti, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's hard.
George Ligeti.
Frank Bridge or something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah, there's also a couple British. There's that. Who's the other guy? There's no.
Yehudi Weiner also.
Really? Yeah.
A piece with the same combination. I actually studied composition with him.
Really?
Briefly.
It's a good piece?
Yeah. Very good piece. Very good piece. Very different than this.
John Harbison has a piece called Twilight Music, which is really great. Have you played that one?
No. I think that originally was one of the things we talked about.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah, a lot of rehearsal time.
Oh, we don't want to rehearse. Right?
But the Ligeti was written in the, I think it was the early 80s, written for Herman Bauman. And it was actually dedicated to the Brahms trio. But if you listen to it, you would never know that. But the reason about this trio is it was actually written for the natural horn. Even though you would never suspect that from how chromatic
this
it is.
This trio.
It is.
Yeah.
There's actually a great recording of it. I don't know if you've heard the recording of Lowell Greer playing on a natural horn. It's the only one I know
of.
No.
Yeah.
I played it with him.
Oh, you did?
Like that, yeah. I played it with him in Ann Arbor.
A natural horn?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Many years ago.
It's my favorite recordings, but no one ever played it. It takes a lot. Really, you have to have full command of the natural horn to do a piece like this. But what Ligeti did is he wrote in the very modern style as he does, and he wrote a lot of parts that are for natural horn, but in a modern vein.
Horn means horns without vowels.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The horns without using vowels in the harmonic series. So a lot of the strange intonations that you get from an untempered clavier, he wanted to get from the horn, and that's. But yet it's similar to the natural instrument that Brahms had written for. That's the dedication for it. So.
Although I just did a performance of the Bach B minor Mass with Amsterdam Baroque soloist, and they had a rather large natural horn, and I personally think that the natural horn is the best argument for vowels that was ever made.
I heard that performance went quite well.
Yeah, it did. Oh, yeah.
I heard
yeah,
that. Yeah, I wish I could have seen it.
Yeah, no, it did. As as best as one can do with that instrument. But it's really challenging to play. Yeah. I'd love to hear these other pieces sometime. So next time you guys are back, there's your assignment. Well, it sounds like a great recital, and I appreciate your coming in to let us know about it. And Mr. Cardenas, pleasure to meet
you. Thank you. Pleasure.
You heard a portion of a Live and Local episode from March 13th of 2012, featuring University of Illinois faculty members Ian Hobson and Bernard Scully, and visiting violinist Andres Cardenas, formerly of the Pittsburgh Symphony. The occasion was their joint recital that week at the Krannert Center in Urbana. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for joining us today for Live and Local.